Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back. It is our number two of the Lombardi Line, hanging out with you guys on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe out here at the Circuit Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. Michael Lombardi in the great state of New Jersey. For those of you who are listening and want to watch us, you can go ahead and watch us on Samsung TV Plus, on Roku, on Zumo Play. Like we're all over the place here. Also at VSiN.com as well, and DraftKingsNetwork.com is where you can watch us here on the Lombardi Line. But we had a fun first hour, fun second hour on deck. 30 minutes from now, Jordan Schultz, NFL Insider, now of Bleacher Report, will be joining us to give us a little bit of info ahead of Tuesday's trade deadline in the National Football League. But before we get into all that, let's get to the Lombardi look ahead. And here's a game, Michael, between two teams in Southern Divisions, AFC South, NFC South, that you are looking to stay away from. What game is that?
Well, I mean, look, the Atlanta-Tennessee game, and typically this would have been an all-in on Mike Vrabel as a dog. But, you know, once the Will Levis news comes into play, you're like, okay, do I really want to play this one? And then, you know, I think a lot of people have been way too hard on Desmond Ridder. I really do. I think Desmond Ridder has thrown the ball since the return from London. Even in London, he just has turned the ball over too much. I mean, last week was ridiculous fumbles. Fumble going into the end zone, he gets stripped by Winfield. Fumble on a quarterback sneak. But you can't really, if you watch the tape, you can't argue with his accuracy, the throws he's made. He's actually given him some life. And I'm saying this coming from a point of, I wasn't a Ridder fan. He's played better. Now, this week, they go against a Tennessee front that's pretty good, where they get Tart back. Hard to run the ball with Tart back in there. So it's kind of an even game. And anytime you can get Vrabel as a dog, you want to take it. But there's so much uncertainty that I kind of just said, okay, Mr. Hall and Mr. Oates, you got this game. This is a, one of those I can't do in terms of putting it on my recommendations for Sunday.
Nope, that is your official Hall and Oates play of the week.
No, can do.
Absolutely love hearing that sound. But to your point, though,
can you play that one? I mean, are you going to play it on your card?
Except I don't have it on my card yet. Like if we ever got to like a full three, maybe I would entertain it. But I just think that like the point that you bring up with Will Levis is just like how do you back that? Because like you pretty much are betting Will Levis to win the game if you're taking plus three, because like how often does the game land on one or two? Then I guess you would push on three. But to your point though about Mike Vrabel, like after the bye week, like he has been phenomenal since 2018, since he's taken over as the Tennessee Titans coach. He's 5-1 post bye. And I think that includes the playoff game there when they lost to Cincinnati. So in the regular season, he's undefeated in the bye week. So this
weekend is a landmine card. And why do I say that? It's a landmine card because on the surface, right, there's so many home dogs. And so you're saying to yourself, okay, great. A lot of home dogs. We've got, you know, we got Denver home dog. We've got Indianapolis a home dog. Pittsburgh, Carolina, Washington. There's 9 home dogs. So as a bettor, you say, well, I'm just going to bet the home dogs and be okay. Probably a good theory. But what are the ones you're going to bet? That's to me where it's the landmine. You know, do you run away and just play Pittsburgh with Tomlin as a home dog or Green Bay as a home dog? See, to me, this is the hardest card because when there's only 2 or 3 home dogs, you say, okay, I like that one. But everybody has run to the window for Denver. They have run the line open 9, 9.5. Now it's down to 7. Might go to 6.5 before, right? And so nobody's running to the window to bet Arizona as a home dog. I get that. But to me, this is why I think it's a landmine. It's very challenging with this many home dogs. Do you really, are they all going to cover? Well, and so I think what you have to do is take the ones that you feel like with the coach that is good at covering, Tomlin, Vrabel. Those are the ones I think you need to stay to.
Let's get to one of those home dogs. This one is short home dog, not a big price like Denver or one of those ones. But this is the Green Bay Packers, 1.5-point home dogs against the Minnesota Vikings. And this, Michael, is your line of the week.
Well, I think this is an interesting one because the Packers open up, at, I think, 2.5-point favorite on the look ahead line on Sunday. And when Minnesota won the game on Monday night, this line flipped. And I think anytime you see the line go from favorite to dog, right, it really favors the team that was the favorite at one time.
Yep.
Now, you know, Minnesota, for it's a great win. Okay, I get that. But Minnesota, there was moments in that game where it could have fallen apart. I think with Aaron Jones back, it really helps Green Bay's offense. Green Bay's been, biggest problem is their first halves have been a disaster. They've been really bad in the first half. And they've got to get off to a faster start at home particularly. And so can Minnesota block the front? Can they handle this? I mean, Kirk Cousins is a favorite on the road. I think you have to buyer beware there. So Green Bay is a pro pick. There's no question. There's been a lot of the pro comes in on this one because when you look at it, when I see the splits on my board, you know, there's a lot there. They have 64% of the tickets. But Green Bay's got 90% of the money, which tells you that the public loves Minnesota. They moved the number, but the other side really likes Green Bay.
Yeah, no, this is a leg on one of my teasers. I teased Green Bay. Once it got to 1.5, I was like, all right, let me take them to 7.5-point home dogs, and I paired it with
these teasers. But you've been doing this for so long. Why do you do teasers?
I don't do teasers that much. I don't tease that much. I'm not. I think a lot of people on our network tease a lot, but I wait till we get to like a couple months into the season to start teasing once we have like a better idea what the teams are, because I don't think you want to tease when like, hey, like we're all just sort of making educated guesses about what the difference between the teams are. So like September, never a teaser. Like early October, never teasers. Now that we get to Halloween, I was like, I'll tease a little bit here. Okay. So we tease Green Bay.
You should go out as Halloween in your costume as a teaser. That's what you should do, right?
Well, I might go as the bet splits. Maybe that's what I'll do. But I think what's interesting with this game, though, with teasing it, is that, I mean, the Minnesota Vikings don't win games by multiple scores. You know, like they play one score games, whether they win them or lose them, they play within like that 7-point range. So I think as a teaser, teasing Green Bay up to a 7.5, you can find another leg with it. I think that's a decent way to go. The leg that I paired with it, you might not like this one, but it's our guy. It's our guy in primetime Sunday Night Football, Brandon Staley. We teased him down to 2.5-point favorites. So if Tyson Bagent beats me, I guess he just beats me. But that's my teaser.
Well, I mean, look, if Boy Wonder loses this game,
it's over for him.
It's over. I mean, you know, he can pack his. I mean, this will be. I mean, he's been on so many missed flights for Al Davis that it's ridiculous. But this might be one he's on the Spanos missed flight train.
Yeah,
because he can't. You know, and look, you know, the questions are finally being asked. If Justin Herbert played in any big market, people will be wondering why. Why does he look so bad in the second half? Why can't he hold the lead? Why does he do some bad things during game? Like, there would be a lot of why. Have we overvalued Justin Herbert? Is he not as good as you think? You know, and I think ultimately, have we overvalued the Chargers?
Yeah.
Everybody says the Chargers are this incredibly talented team, you know, and I keep asking where. Like, okay, Bosa's a really talented player. He hasn't played like a talented player in a while. He's been hurt quite a bit. Mm-hmm. I mean, Khalil Mack was once a very talented player. I know he got 6 sacks in a game against a rookie quarterback, but you can't, if you watch that game and understand football, against anybody, he's not getting those 6 sacks. Like, they don't dominate anybody up front. I mean, this is a team that can't stop the forward pass. They're 31st in the National Football League in yards per attempt passing. They're 32nd in yards allowed. They're 32nd in yards allowed. And so people go into the game and throw it on them. They're 28th in terms of the attempts they see. Now, you can still run the ball on them. They're 16th in the league in that category. How about this, Femi? If they're so talented, how are they the last team in the league in allowing first downs?
I mean, they're not that talented, and they have bad coaching.
There you go.
And they have bad coaching.
And he's not a good coach.
Yeah.
So the lines tend to be overinflated when he's involved. I mean, last week we talked about it. I mean, Kansas City was, everybody was on the Chargers because they play close games. But they don't. That game wasn't as close as the score. The Chargers had a chance to get back into it, but Kansas City was always in control of that game.
Yeah. And like the guys that you point to that you would think are talented, like Derwin James haven't really played up to his level in the last couple of years. Joey Bosa has been dealing with there. Like everyone's just like playing down. Like they have big names and they're names that we all recognize because they were once really good players, but they're just not playing up to it. And then Mike Williams, of course, he is now out for the rest of the season. So the offense isn't as explosive. Like there's a lot of problems going on, but there better not be no damn problem Sunday Night Football. They better go ahead and cover the teaser leg at least. otherwise, well, otherwise, look, I will
don't
be
come crying. Don't come crying to me. If you you lose betting Boy Wonder. Don't come crying to me. Like, well, seriously. But and it's just, but I agree with you. It's a good matchup for you in this game because the Bears' pass defense is not good. And the Chargers with the other Boy Wonder calling plays. Remember, he was going to turn this whole thing around because they got Kellen Moore. Mm-hmm. Just ask anybody in the NFL. He's the greatest offensive coordinator since Sid Gilman. And so, you know, they'll be able to throw the football. There's no question. Yeah,
they better be. Let's get to the coordinator battle of the week. And this one is an interesting game in Indianapolis between the Saints and the Colts.
Yeah. I've not heard anybody talk about this, right? And everybody talks about the games last year, Gardner Minshew playing home in Philadelphia.
Yep.
Against the Eagles, against the Saints. And Dennis Allen, whatever you want to say about him as a head coach and his record, and I'm not going to debate that with anybody. Whatever you say, he's a good defensive coordinator. And he basically took away Philly's game last year. I know Minshew was the quarterback, but they were really had trouble. And you look at that game this year, and you come and say, okay, he's going to go into Indianapolis. He's got really good corners. His corners are healthy. His defense is healthy. You know, he held Philly to 19 first downs. I mean, New Orleans only got, 11 first downs. New Orleans only got 19 in the game. I mean, they struggled. They were sacked six times in that game by New Orleans. So I just think, to me, New Orleans won that game last year in Philly with 184 yards passing. So I think this is a really interesting matchup. The line has moved all over the place. It's one of those I don't really want to touch, but I'm anxious to watch it.
Yeah, I'm seeing where I'm sitting at Circa. It's now Saints 2.5-point favorites. They are now 2-point favorites, though, across the board as the consensus line total at 43.5. All right, on the other side, different game or more of the same next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
With all four major sports in action, there's no better time of year to be a sports bettor. And with our new Sports Equinox special, there's no better time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. Sign up now and get full VSiN Pro access to everything we do through May 1st for only $120. And it includes daily best bets, unlimited access to our betting splits, plus our all-exclusive betting content for the World Series, college football, the rest of the NFL season, March Madness, college hoops is coming up pretty quickly, the NBA and NHL regular seasons, and the NFL draft. Don't miss this limited time offer. Visit vsin.com/subscribe to sign up now. Well, Mike, we're out in a big college hoops area, Jersey. Everyone's excited for, St. John's hoops, Seton Hall hoops. I mean, it's
This is a basketball community. Yeah. You know, we got the 76ers. We can watch Embiid run from one 3-point line to the next. And
they covered, though.
Yeah. They're covered. Okay, keep going. It's a long year, Femi.
It is a long
year. I love that. You know what I love now is I start getting texts from people in the media and friends of mine when they watch the game and they tell me, yeah, you're right. He doesn't really run the whole court, does he? And I'm like, well, if you paid attention, you know.
Yeah.
But once you get, it's like anything. If you go to work early one day, like George Costanza, you go and park your car there early and you leave your car there. Everybody thinks you're a hard worker. Meanwhile, you're sleeping under your desk. You know, it's just, it's all perception.
It is. Yeah. Well, he's the reigning MVP, but
and that happens with NFL teams too. There's a perception about Buffalo being a great team. Mm-hmm. There's a perception about Cincinnati being a great team, even though they haven't done it yet, especially offensively, right?
Yep.
And so you have to be as betters, and that's why every week you've got to wash away the perceptions a little bit and don't assume this team is really going to be great this week or, you know, like I thought when Baltimore was in London, and even though they barely covered the Tennessee game, I thought Lamar was great in that game, and I had no problem thinking he was going to be great against Detroit. That carryover, but I think you have to not let perception rule you, and I think this segment kind of speaks to this.
It definitely does. This segment, which is usually a Thursday staple here on the Lombardi Line, but we're doing it here on the weekend, and I can't wait to get into a different game or more of the same, and we'll be taking some units of these NFL teams and seeing if what we saw last week will carry on over into week 8 and maybe beyond that. And we'll start with the Detroit Lions offense, and this offense was moving along efficiently. They were the talk of the town until they met the buzzsaw that is the Baltimore Baltimore Ravens last week, 337 yards, only 6 points, over one in the red zone. They had one turnover and five sacks allowed. Is this a different game or more of the same for the Detroit Lions as we head into week eight?
No, I think it'll be a different game. Look, they go into it. They have a bye week after this game, so they can kind of correct themselves. Look, they ran into a guy playing like an MVP, right? They gave up 146 yards rushing in the game, which essentially is the amount of rushing yards they gave up in the last two games. I mean, before that game, they hadn't given up a 100-yard rusher. The Raiders don't have a 100-yard rusher on their team in any game. So, and look, we know this about the Lions. When they don't run the ball effectively, they're not a good team. They ran for 84 yards, lost. They ran for 40 against Tampa, a lot closer game than they think. But I think they can correct their issues because I think they're good up front and they're good in the offensive line. When they get healthy, they just have to play a style, right? They want to play from in front. They want to play action.
Yeah, no, that's what they want to do. And the Ravens did not allow them to do that last week. They're going touchdown, 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 touchdown on the first four drives of the game. And then the Lions were kind of playing from behind the eight ball. And we saw that really get off the rails last week. They're not as bad as 38-6 and what they put up yesterday or last week, I should say, offensively. Speaking of the Browns, their defense was the talk of the town after they kind of clamp down the San Francisco 49ers. Then they go to Indianapolis and they give up 473 yards to Gardner Minshew and that led offense 38 points, five touchdowns and a field goal, 3 for 4 in the red zone on touchdowns allowed, 20 first downs allowed for this Browns defense that was number one in all the advanced metrics and still are because they were number one by a far margin, but now closer to the pack. Is this different game or more of the same as they head up to the Pacific Northwest to face the Seahawks as a 3.5-point underdog?
No, they're really good defensively. And I think what's surprising is they're not a great red zone defense. They're 28th in the league in the red zone. Before, we didn't know if they were good in the red zone because not many teams got down in the red zone, but they haven't been very good down there, you know? And so when you look at that, when you look at what they've been able to, the team's only been in the red zone 13 times against them, and they've gotten 9 touchdowns, which is why they're 28th in the league. They forced 4 turnovers in that game. Their defense scored essentially 10 points. You know, Myles Garrett's fumble in the end zone got him 7. And then, of course, they come out and stop him on 3 plays after that, and they get another field goal, which is 10 points. So I think they'll get back to playing their level of play. I mean, they didn't tackle well in this game, which I thought was the biggest concern. Pittman's long touchdown run was really related to missed tackles more than anything.
Yeah, this is the Lombardi Line on the DraftKings Network. We're playing different game, more of the same here on a college football Saturday. We'll get to the college football to wrap up the show as well. Jordan Schultz joining us, Bleacher Report next segment here. How about the New England Patriots offense, though? Because this was an offense that we'd seen struggle mightily all throughout the season.
You're being kind.
And then they were really efficient and explosive against the Buffalo Bills last week, winning that game outright as a 7.5-point dog, 364 total yards, 21 first downs, 29 points scored, 3 for 5 in the red zone, only 1 sack allowed. Different game, more of the same now that they're down on South Beach as a 9.5-point dog.
Well, I think, look, a lot of it's tied to their turnover. They still turned the ball over. Bourne's fumble, you know, gave the Bills great field position. But I think they kind of have found themselves, especially up front. Trent Brown has been on the injury report. Whether he can play or not, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. That's critical. But they kind of have their offensive line in a comfortable place, which they hadn't earlier in the season. They were playing all different players all over. So I think they'll continue to improve. They have Mac playing under center more. I think they're utilizing their skill players, more bunch formations, more different things. I thought Stevenson finally played well. Look, here's the reality about New England. They can't play from behind, and they can't turn the ball over, which is what they've been doing up until that Buffalo game last week. So, you know, I think we're going to see a little bit more of what they did against Buffalo, but I wouldn't go overboard yet.
Do you think New England needs to make a trade to add to this offense at the trade deadline, or maybe add some pieces here and there to try to go for a playoff spot?
Well, I don't, you know, it depends on what the deal is. You know, one thing about Belichick is very Warren Buffett-ish. It's, unless he's in an advantage of the deal, he's probably not going to make it. If somebody came to them and said, okay, Josh Uche, we'll give you a better than a compensatory pick. If he doesn't plan on signing him to a long-term deal, he's going to take that, or he's just going to wait for the long-term for somebody else to give him a compensatory. I think that's kind of the play. You have to weigh the options here. And most people at the trading deadline are looking for, you know, they want to shop at Feline's basement. They want discounts. And if you're really an active guy, you don't want to give away discounts. Why would you be in a vulnerable position?
Yeah. So you wouldn't anticipate them adding a player. Maybe it could be potentially trading a player if they get a fair market
deal. Yeah, I could see them trading. I couldn't see them saying, okay, if we get this one guy, we'll really go up the ladder. I think they've got to get the players they have to play better.
All right. Well, they started to do that with the offensive line last week. We'll see if that carries over into week 8. How about the Minnesota Vikings defense? A hell of a performance Monday night against San Francisco. 325 total yards allowed, only 17 points allowed, 1-for-2 TDs in the red zone allowed, 3 forced turnovers, 2 interceptions, and a fumble for the Vikings defense. Different game, more of the same now that they are road favorites at Lambeau Field tomorrow afternoon.
Well, they've forced 6 turnovers in the last 2 weeks, so you got to think it's going to be more of the same. They've played better. You know, they're disruptive on defense. More of the thing, people think the blitz has to get home. Not really. The blitz has to get pressure. The blitz has to force the ball out quicker. And they were able to have success doing that. Even though San Francisco threw for 260 yards in the game, San Francisco turned the ball over 3 times. The McCaffrey fumble and the 2 interceptions. So I do think they have a better rhythm of what they're doing. And look, I thought Cousins was really good last week. He threw the ball really well, 378 yards. They had 452 yards of offense. I mean, that was as good of offensive day as they had since they played the Chargers. Did I mention the Chargers to you as being great defensively? Since they played the Chargers back in week 3.
Michael, we have 5 teams in the NFC sitting at 3-4. Vikings, Rams, Buccaneers, Commanders, Saints. If you had to place your hard-earned dollars on one of those teams to make the playoffs as the 7 seed in the NFC, once again, Vikings, Rams, Bucks, Commanders, Saints, who would it be?
I would probably say the Vikings. If they keep Danielle Hunter, I think they're going to have to keep him to be there. I would like to have said the Rams, but the Rams, the longer the game goes, you worry about them being able to stay in. I think they'll get off to a fast start against Dallas next week on Sunday, but then I think as the game continues, it'll be less effective for them. So I probably would say Minnesota. I can't see Washington. Washington's offense is atrocious. They don't even help the quarterback, and they've gotten worse on defense. Can you believe that? They were a good defense. And I just can't see them improving. New Orleans, I have no faith in the quarterback. He just continually wants to take checkdowns. That's what he's done his whole career.
Yeah, we might have to give the official mea culpa on the Washington Commanders there and put up the white flag of say, hey, we were wrong on the scene. Like, I know that was our team this offseason. We thought that they would play
well,
much
better.
Well,
I was counting on them being better. I was counting on playing the same level of defense. And they can't even play that. Yeah. It's a mess. It's really a mess.
It really is. And they're just going to continue on forward because that's what they do. To your point, though, on that Rams thing, you said that you like them to kind of start fast against Dallas. If for those of you who like to bet the first half, the Rams are catching 3.5 in the first half against the Cowboys. So maybe that's an interesting wager to make there. Just kind of play the first couple quarters there. Maybe Dallas gets off to a sleepy start coming out of the bye week at home. We'll see what happens. All right. Jordan Schultz of Bleacher Report will join us next to break down the NFL trade deadline here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You'll also get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page, sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. Check the top VSiN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit, and ROI, and see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. For VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, betting guides, plus 24/7 video access, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Sign up and now at Get VSiN and everything we do through May 1st for only $120 at VSiN.com/subscribe. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line on the DraftKings Network. Michael Lombardi out in New Jersey. Femi Abebefe here in downtown Las Vegas. We will wrap up the show with some college football thoughts, final thoughts on today's college football card. But joining us now to break down the NFL trade deadline that is coming up on Tuesday, 4 o'clock Eastern, 1 o'clock Pacific time, the one and only Jordan Schultz, NFL insider now of Bleacher Report, recently announced there, hired with Bleacher Report. Congratulations on the new gig, Jordan. How are we doing here?
Hey, fellas. Thank you. Good morning. And fired up for another, what I think should be a pretty good deadline.
You think there'll be some trades, Jordan? I mean, usually there's a lot of smoke, but very little fire.
I do. I mean, I think, you know, you've already seen a couple. Obviously, we saw Hardman get moved and Byard. But I, to me, one of the big reasons why, or maybe the main reason why, is the jockeying for couple of these quarterbacks and Drake May and Caleb Williams. And what I've asked around since I've gotten is that, you know, everyone wants to see at the latest possible date when they can determine what their team is going to be this season. In other words, we're going into week 8 here. And if you're Minnesota, for example, who I thought was going to be a seller, you won 2 in a row. You just beat San Francisco. You're suddenly back in the NFC North picture, which looks relatively open. You know, maybe you're not selling. Maybe you're buying or you're holding put. You know, I think there are a lot of teams that are in that at that point now where they're trying to determine at the latest possible date what they think they can be or won't be for this season. But when it comes down to Caleb Williams and Drake May, Mike, I do believe that there is so much interest and such a belief from so many clubs that they could be franchise cornerstones for the next decade plus. You know, we're already seeing as an almost blueprint with Houston this year. Just look at CJ Stroud. I know he goes 3rd overall, but you know, that whole franchise feels and looks different. And really it's because of one player. I mean, D'Amico's done a great job. Love Will Anderson, but look at the entire ethos of the organization seems to have changed overnight because of one quarterback.
Well, that's really interesting. If there's a lot of teams that are looking to kind of position themselves for these young quarterbacks, who might be the teams on the other end that try to take advantage and pluck some talent from those rosters? Like, who do you think will be the most active buyers at the deadline? We know Philadelphia is always interested. Howie Roseman reports are he's not done, but who among the Eagles as well will be looking to buy come Tuesday?
Yeah, I think no question Philadelphia. I would look at Baltimore. I know they want to add a running back. You know, I'd be interested in Buffalo, potentially, maybe a running back or a linebacker. Secondary, they lost Matt Milano, who was playing like just a complete monster buzzsaw. They lost Trey White, so maybe a secondary. You know, I think San Francisco as well, looking at potentially a slot corner. If you're in the mix and you know your window is, for example, like a Buffalo, I don't want to say closing, but your window is now. The time is now to pounce. You have to be aggressive. You have to take advantage of it. And you know, you mentioned Howie as well. I mean, I don't know if there's a GM in the league who calls more, and that doesn't necessarily spur action, but it just keeps you in the mix, and it lets everyone else know we want to be aggressive. And I think that's why, you know, it's one of the reasons Howie is so well-regarded. And you know, we talked about Byard earlier. They wanted safety. I don't know if they'd be done in the secondary. So, yeah, I would look at Philadelphia, San Francisco, Baltimore, Buffalo, you know, I thought it was also interesting what Jerry Jones said. I know Dallas would potentially like to add a linebacker. You know, they've really missed LVE, and he says we're not gonna be aggressive. We're not gonna be calling, initiating. I don't know for sure, certainly, if Dallas is gonna make a move, but it wouldn't surprise me if they did, especially again considering they've been down one of their top backers.
How about Washington? That one interests me the most because is A, the owner going to allow Martin Mayhew, Marty Herney, and Ron Rivera, who has all the authority in the building, to make a trade when they may not be back next year, depending on what happens? And do they want to trade away some of their assets for who? So yeah, there's always that fine line between I don't want to trade anybody because I got to win, but then the franchise wants to get picks for next season. So do you have any insight into the Washington football team?
Great question, because the Commanders, you mentioned Rivera, you know, what does he care about picks? You know, I mean, and for him, he wants to win now. And that organization has been in flux, but I think the insight I would say is this: the new ownership group with Josh Harris, they want to have a sustainable franchise. You think about Dan Snyder over the last couple of decades, the antithesis of that. So you think about Chase Young and Montez Sweat, two really good young pass rushers, both going to become free agents. It would make sense, and it does make sense, that they're open to trading one of those guys. And I think the idea that you're not going to be able to pay both long-term, while disappointing if you're a Commanders fan, is just makes perfect sense. You know, they're both represented by the same agent. They're both essentially the same position. They provide similar value. You know, I was told that it might take a 2 or a 3 to get one of them. You talk about, again, both becoming free agents. So you don't want to just rent a guy, but I would look at those two players. And I think in general, again, you're really fighting, if you're Mayhew, if you're Rivera, this concept that we want to win now. Are we good enough to just, you know, float around the NFC East and maybe make a wild card push? Sam Howell has been decent, but certainly is, you know, he's going to break the all-time sack record from David Carr. The offensive line is probably the worst in football. So if they were a buyer, then would they potentially want to go out and try to get a lineman? Is there a lineman? There's a lot of question marks with the Commanders. I wish I had the answers, but I certainly wouldn't be surprised if they moved Sweat or Young.
We're speaking with Jordan Schultz, your NFL insider over at Bleacher Report. You mentioned Sweat and Young. Let's talk about some other pass rushers here. Brian Burns for Carolina, Danielle Hunter for Minnesota. Of those two guys, which do you think is most likely to be dealt by Tuesday?
I would have said Hunter for sure 3 weeks ago. I still think the answer is Hunter compared to Burns. I'd be shocked if Brian Burns was moved. He's a cornerstone. 24 years old, just a phenomenal young player. He really wanted to get a long-term extension done before the season. His number is probably around $30 million a year. But I would be shocked if they moved him. I really don't see it. Daniel Hunter is more interesting because he's basically a double-digit sack guy every year. He's been terrific for Minnesota ever since day one. He has 8 sacks, which is, I believe, tied for first in the league. And the other key factor with him is if the Vikings were to trade Danielle Hunter, they would save over $8 million in cap for this season. But then again, they just rattled off 2 in a row. And, you know, when Justin Jefferson went on IR, I thought, considering the direction and essentially rudderless state of this team, it wouldn't surprise me if he missed most or all the rest of the season. Now that they've won 2 in a row and they're back in the mix, they just came off their best win of the season by far. You could see a path with Justin Jefferson coming back, and you could see a path for Hunter not getting dealt. But if you're asking for Hunter or Burns, certainly the answer is Hunter if one were to get moved.
Jordan, I know you live in the New York area. Brian Daboll was noncommittal on whether Daniel Jones was going to go on IR. What do you think will happen with Daniel Jones? Is he a candidate for IR, or do you think he'll play in the next week or so?
I do not believe Daniel Jones will go on IR, no. And, I think – he's such a competitor, and I know Tyrod Taylor has played well in his absence. And again, Daboll made it very clear that Daniel Jones is the starting quarterback, and that's the right move. My sense is that Jones will not go on IR. I think there's a really good chance that he'd come back week 9. They have unfortunately for them, they have a late bye. I think it's week 13, which is not great, but no, I guess the simplest way to put it is I don't see a scenario where Jones is on IR unless there's another setback this week.
Jordan, we got about 45 seconds left. Kyler Murray, it sounds like he's going to be playing sooner rather than later for the Arizona Cardinals. Yeah. Like the second half of the season, do you think this is what's going to determine whether he's the long-term solution for them or not? Or how do you see this playing out with Kyler Murray and the Cardinals?
Yeah, that's the question that I've been asking too. If he were to come back, I know we're strapped on time, and he plays really well, hypothetically, or well, does that add credence to the fact that he is the long-term guy? Is he the long-term guy regardless? There's a lot of question marks, new coach, new GM. They want him to come back and play well and be the long-term guy, though. I can tell you that. And I think that would probably be my best guess at this point without knowing exactly when he'll come back. He was close this week. I would anticipate there's a pretty good shot he plays week 9.
All right. There
Great
is.
Job, Jason.
He is
Jordan. Thank you, Jordan. Appreciate you.
That's all right. Thanks, guys. Take care.
He's Jordan Schultz, Jason. NFL insider over there at Bleacher Report. Good stuff there on Kyler Murray. I mean, it sounds like we thought week 10.
He plays
maybe it's
good. He's a trade candidate. I mean, if he plays good and stays healthy, he's a trade candidate. Even if he gets hurt, he's a trade candidate.
Yeah. Well, a lot of dominoes there in Arizona with a new regime, Monty Osifort and Jonathan Gannon. All right. We will wrap up the show on the other side, going down the College Football Board, giving our last thoughts on the marquee games here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Don't forget on DraftKings Sportsbook, this week, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, all customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day. Download the app and use the promo code VSiN when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line final segment here on the program. Hell, I'll tell you what, it's been a fun show here. We've had three great guests.
Quick one.
Really quick show. Well, thank you to our producer, Elliot Bowman, putting together these awesome segments to make things go fast. We're pacing well here on a Saturday morning. But thank you to Tim Murray, host of VSiN Primetime and the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Thank you to Jim Nagy of the Senior Bowl, executive director down there in Mobile. And then thank you to Jordan Schultz, who joined us in the last segment, NFL insider over at Bleacher Report. All three of them helping us make it a better program. But here, let's give out our final thoughts on this college football slate. We were just talking about this one during the break. The game in Lawrence is of interest to many bettors here, because Kansas right now, they're getting bet quite a bit. We're down to 7 at some spots. Where I'm sitting, it's still 7.5 at Circa, but total is at 67. So the total's kind of ticked up a little bit, and more money pouring in on the Jayhawks as we're about 15 minutes from kickoff.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is a game where Dylan Gabriel should have a really good day against a weak Kansas defense. So, you know, you're always, when you're taking these teams as the line's moving towards them that are weak in defense, you're always a little nervous. You know, the line opened at 10 and now you're down to 7. You know, at what point do you come back and play Oklahoma, Femi?
Yeah. I mean, at 7, it feels like Oklahoma's as a bet, you know? Like, I get it. Like,
it seems like it to me.
Like, Kansas, they have a nice home field advantage, not, like, too overbearing, but it's a good home field advantage. The students will be fired up for this one since OU's in town. But, man, like, Oklahoma's just, like they're the classier team. Like, they're a class, weight class above of what Kansas punches at. So, I don't know. Maybe it's square, but I think at 7, I think you got to kind of talk yourself into the Sooners here laying the points there, because I like the point that you make of, like, Oklahoma's offense should be able to be really productive here in this game. So we'll see what happens with that game. The other game of the day, though, is the 12:30 kick West Coast time, 3:30. That is Oregon and Utah.
Yeah.
Not a whole lot of movement with this one, but this is a marquee game. Ducks 6.5-point favorites, total 47. Final thoughts. Do you think that Oregon goes unscathed here and is able to get out of Rice-Eccles with a win, or does Utah do it again as a home dog?
Look, I never doubt Utah. They're tough. They're physical. But this is a tough matchup for them. It really is. I think I would take Utah on the points. I don't know if they can win the game, because the Ducks can really – I mean, the Ducks are good on defense. I mean, I think people have underestimated how good they are. I know Washington scored 38 on them. Washington's really good on offense. It's a different offense. Mm-hmm. You know, that when they played a really good defense against UCLA, that was a 14-7 game. If UCLA had done anything, they win that one. So I think, to me – It's going to be a hard game for Utah because of the lines for both Oregon and offensive and defensive lines of Oregon. I lean towards taking the points, but I wouldn't be surprised if Oregon covered.
How about this game that we haven't talked much about, and we haven't talked a whole lot about Ohio State in general? The Buckeyes are in Madison to take on Wisconsin. Big win, of course, for Ohio State last week. Their defense showed up and showed out against Penn State. Now they're laying 14.5 in Madison, where it's Camp Randall at night, jump around, the whole deal there. Total sitting at 46. Where are you at with this Ohio State offense? Because I think there might be some big question marks at quarterback here with Kyle McCord, despite the weapons that he has around him.
You know, I don't know where I am with their offense. I was so angry at Penn State's offense, I didn't have time to get angry at Ohio State's offense last week. I mean, that might have been one of the worst offensive play calling games I've ever seen in my life. I mean, they kept doing the same thing over a third, and they kept getting into 15 third downs. At some point, maybe we should avoid third down. This is a tough spot for Ohio State. I mean, that's a tough environment. Mm-hmm. If you've never been to Camp Randall on a night game, smell the bratwurst, all that. Luke Fickell, former Ohio State nose tackle. I mean, there's a lot of things going on here. Now, his team isn't on the same level as Ohio State, but I think there is a lot of emotion in that, and I think they'll typically play to it, you know. And one thing I do know about Fickell's teams, they are physical and they are tough. They may not be as talented, so it's going to take a lot of whatever Ohio State has offensively. I think it ultimately will be, you know, it's going to be a close game. I think the 14.5 is a little bit too long.
Yeah, like Wisconsin, offensively, it's offensive. Like, I think they're pretty bad. But I don't know if Ohio State's going to score much. Like, this feels sort of like 20-6 or something like that, in that range. Like, that's kind of like, honestly, I think if I had to play, I'd play the under at 46 right now. Like, people look at this game, and I get it. Ohio State has some awesome skill guys. Marvin Harrison Jr., we'll talk more about him once we get closer to the draft. He is unbelievable. But it feels like kind of like a 20-6 sort of game here, to where maybe the Buckeyes get close to the number, but I feel like the game kind of consistently stays under the total.
Look, let's put things in perspective here, though. I mean, Wisconsin defensively is not a pushover pick. Nope, I mean, they're the 20th best best defense in the league, yeah, and they're really good. You know, and, you know, one of the areas where they're not as strong is their run defense. And so, you know, will Ryan Day run the rock? I think that's going to be the key question in the game.
He says his team is physical as many other teams in the country. So time to put up or shut up. The world's largest cocktail party in Jacksonville, Georgia, and Florida. Bulldogs 14-point favorite. So the 14 in the hook is now gone. It's 14 across the board. 49.5 is our total at DraftKings. Is there a side that you like in this game?
You know, I mean, look, the one thing is, I think what Tim Murray said and what Jim Nagy said, this is not the same Georgia team. We say that, but they're seventh overall in the league in the country on defense. They're the best defense in the Southeast Conference, right? And they're the second best offense in the Southeast Conference, or the seventh best offense in the Southeast Conference. So I know they kind of stubbed their toe a little bit. They got Missouri coming up after this game. Missouri played them tough last year in Columbia. You know, I just have not loved Florida's offense this year. I don't think that they kind of have gotten in rhythm. This is a big one. This is a game that I think Kirby needs to play well in for his team, because I think he wants to prove his team hasn't declined. These games are always close, so you take the points, but I just don't like the Florida team this year.
Yeah, honestly, I would lay it if I had to play this game. I think I'd lay 14. I just don't trust Florida. Like, I haven't been impressed with Florida. I can't get that game out of my head, and I probably should, but when they played Utah, the opening game of the season, where I was like, is just horrendous. Like,
we're counting on them being better offensively, and that's where I'm disappointed, is they're not the same team offensively. You know, they don't run the ball like you would think, and their total offense is right in the 50 percentile in the league, and they can't run it. If they get behind in this game, Georgia will cover.
And I also think that, like, these rivalry games, especially when they're in that same region like this one is, we talked about the high school guys, like, this is a big game for recruiting, you know? And I think Kirby realizes that as well. Like, I don't think that Kirby's going to be taking the foot off the gas if they get control of this one. Like, I could see Georgia really putting a number on Florida if the Gators allow it. Duke-Louisville in the ACC, the Cardinals, 6-point favorites, total 45.5. We're still figuring this conference out. We saw North Carolina take a big loss as a big favorite last week against Virginia. That's kind of a mind-blowing game, but how about the Blue Devils and the Cardinals here this afternoon?
Well, we don't think Riley Leonard's going to play, right? And so it's kind of difficult to say. I mean, they're in that Florida State game. He gets hurt, right? You know, I mean, Duke, you know, and when he plays, they're a good team. It's hard to gauge. The one thing we do know about this Duke team, for all the teams they've played, right? They played Florida State. They played Clemson. You know, I mean, they played Notre Dame. This is the fifth best defense in the country. I think if you lean anywhere, you lean the under here. But I think it's going to be hard for Duke to play with Louisville, even though Louisville's not a great talented team. But without Riley Leonard, I'm not sure that they're going to be good enough.
You know, it doesn't escape me that Tuesday will be the first edition of the college football playoff rankings. And I'm curious to see if maybe we get some of these favorites looking to score some style points to impress the committee, to make a nice first impression there before these rankings count. Like, I get, like, you just have to take care of your games and win your games. But maybe if there's a chance to tack on a little extra something, maybe we see a little bit of that with the CFP rankings, the first edition of them coming out on Tuesday. I mean, we're almost in November. I mean, this is
getting good. Well, I think a lot don't you think this will be pretty chalky? It'll be Florida State. It'll be all the undefeated teams will be in the top four, don't you think?
We have a lot of undefeateds, it feels like. But and I know that we still have a whole another month to go. But
Washington, Florida State, Georgia,
Michigan.
I mean, there's your four. If somebody beats them in there, it's got to be based on strength of schedule. I mean, look, you could argue Michigan's schedule, but they're doing something this year that they haven't really done before, which is really like what they did at Michigan State. I think there's an angry, all this investigation stuff, you know, that I think there's, we're going to prove that we're not, you know, we're a great team. Usually they don't play like this. Usually they kind of let the spread get away, but I think they're kind of at the point where they're going to make sure they cover now.
Yeah. They're looking to send a message to everyone out there that's saying that they just win because they're cheating. I think they win. They have a good coach and they have good players. Now, maybe they do get an edge with some of this other stuff. We'll maybe talk about that next week when they start playing games again. They're on the bye week right now. Also on the bye week. Bama LSU, I can't wait for that one next week. Jim Nagy said Jaden Daniels would be his Heisman right now. And that's,
I agree. I echo that. I support that. You're still in the Bo Nix camp. You and Tim Murray, you don't want to give the St. Jude's, but you want to give the Bo Nix. But it's okay. I get it. I understand.
Bodacious at Rice Eccles later this afternoon.
Here we go today. Here it is. 3:30. I'll be thinking of you, Femi.
Everyone will be watching the game. The marquee game of the day. A chance for Bo Nix to have a nice game in a showcase atmosphere. All right. That does it for us here on the Lombardi Line. Hell of a show. Thank you to our producer, Elliot Bowman. Thank you to you, Michael. Thank you to everybody behind the glass. For Femi Benfey, we're wishing you all the best of luck coming up here on this college football Saturday. Live Bet Saturday with JVT and Pam Maldonado is next here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.